your name. Leda. It's very provocative.
You're thinking about the Yates. I bet you know it by heart. In Italian.
Tutto di colpo. La grande ave palpitante sulla ragazza. Staggering girl.
Sconcertante.
Sì, ragazza. Squarcettante.
Hello, happy new year, and welcome to Book Versus Movie. This is a podcast where we read books that have been adapted into movies, and then we try to decide which we like better, the book or the movie. I am Margot P. of ColoniaBook.com, and this is my good friend and co-host, Margot D. of Folk and Fit Chick.
Hi, everyone.
So it's 70 degrees in California.
It's a balmy 40 today, but it was in the teens yesterday.
I saw. We were just saying before we got on the air that I was inspired by Margot D to get a stationary bike. And one of the things I've been enjoying on my stationary bike is I like to find on YouTube, there's these videos where people are just walking around in a world city. Like just the sounds of the city. Nobody's talking, right? And they're live often. And there was a live one 2 days ago of walking around New York City. And I was like, oh man, it looks so cold.
I have something to send to you in the mail. And I just couldn't even walk to the post office. It was too cold. I'm just like, Margot's just going to wait a couple of days.
I'll wait. Well, we have a very exciting book and very new movie that we're going to be talking about today. We were just chatting a little bit before we got on the air. But if you're new, there's a few things you should know. Number one, we spoil everything. So if you've never seen this movie or read this book and you don't want to know what happens, maybe wait on this episode a little bit, because we're going to spoil absolutely everything. If you have recently discovered Book Versus Movie and you'd like to interact with us, you've got books and movies you'd like to suggest, or you'd like to make other listeners of this podcast, there are several places where you can do that on the internet.
Yes, you can just do a basic like of our Facebook page. All the episodes are posted there. I'm not as great about checking that one, but we do have a private Facebook group. In that group, we literally just talk about books and movies, and people are often offering suggestions. We ask, by the way, when you're offering suggestions, it has to be something that's pretty easy to get. The book has to be on Kindle or available through the library apps, or, you know, cheap paperback that we can get pretty quickly. If it's something we have to go through eBay to get, it's just not going to happen. And also, the movie needs to be streaming. Today's movie is streaming on Netflix, so that just totally works in perfectly. We are also on Twitter. And for the Facebook group, you need to type in Book vs Movie Podcast Group and ask to join. It is a private group. On Twitter and Instagram, you spell out Book Versus and Movies. You can send us suggestions there. Or if you want to be old-timey, you can send us an email, Book Versus Movie Podcast, spelled it all out, at gmail.com. We also have stickers and magnets and coasters. So if you want some swag, let us know. We'll drop them in the mail for you.
And we've also recently picked up a lot of new supporters on Patreon.
Yes, we did. Thank you guys so much. We are putting all of our episodes from 2019 and previous to that up on that wall. We literally have dozens of episodes up there that are some really fantastic books and movies. Also, there's some free stuff on there. So just go to Patreon, Patreon, look up Book vs Movie Podcast, and just check it out for yourself. It helps us just pay for books and movies and the hosting costs and things like that. Thank you all so much for doing that.
And we are proud to tell you that this episode is brought to you by Kensington's newest title, Romancing the Rancher by Kate Pierce. Now, this is one that takes place over in my neck of the woods, California. If you like romance, this one sounds pretty good. It says, I'm going to read you the summary just because I thought I found it charming. Welcome to California's ranch country, where the cowboys of New York Times bestselling author Kate Pierce's sexy and heartwarming series live, learn, and find love. Ranching will always run in Evan Miller's blood, but as the fifth son, he also wants to prove to his skeptical family that he can forge his own path. Drawn to the world of rodeo, Evan encounters Josie Martinez, half-sister of world champion bull rider Rio Martinez. Evan hopes Josie will show him the ropes, among other things, but Josie has priorities of her own. Josie's not sure what she's doing at her brother's ranch. She should be back at her office in San Francisco, fulfilling her dream of becoming Young Entrepreneur of the Year. Ever since violence unexpectedly entered her life and her home, she has struggled to get her life back on track. The ranch offers a sanctuary, with one gorgeous exception, Evan. But is he just a distraction, or can their growing bond, an undeniable attraction, persuade Josie that her heart is big enough for work and love? Find Romancing the Rancher by Kate Pierce wherever books are sold, and find out more at kensingtonbooks.com.
You can also find more podcasts. We're part of Frolic Media Network. So you just go to frolic.media/podcast. They talk about pop culture and romance. This book, by the way, Romancing the Rancher, is the sixth of a series about the Miller family. I've been looking, reading up on it on Goodreads, and they have big fans of this whole series.
It has quite a following. Yeah.
So it's Kate, also katepierce.com, P-A-R-C-E. That's the author's website. And she is on Twitter at Kate4Queen.
Speaking of lady writers, we have, today is really exciting. We have a lady writer and a lady filmmaker. Or do we? That's true. We're making assumptions.
Right.
We have a writer who at least is presenting as a lady writer, I think we can say. Yeah.
Yes. She is. She writes anonymously. Elena Ferrante is a pen name, a nom de plume. She's based in Italy. She's put out several books. She's been writing since 1992. And this is what I love, this quote. We're quoting a lot today, Margot. This is why she decided to go and become anonymous. Once I knew that the completed book would make its way in the world without me, once I knew that nothing of the concrete, physical me would ever appear besides the volume, as if the book were a little dog and I were its master. It made me see something new about writing. I felt as though I had released the words from myself. She has not done any press. She doesn't do any tours. There are people who like to go on the interwebs and use computers and try to figure out who this is. And there's some controversy about that. You can find for yourselves who people think it is. But I prefer, if the author says no, can totally respect that.
I agree.
And this is a book that came out in 2006. It's a very short read. It's about 105 pages. I listened to it, and it's on audiobook. And it's,
oh,
yes.
And it's, was it good? It must
have been. It's excellent. And it's also on the Libby app. I know that. So you can either rent either the book or the audiobook on the Libby app. And so, do you want to talk about our basic story today?
I'm going to make that noise a lot. I'm going to have a lot of sighing. I can see, but like happy sighing. This book is exquisite. I freaking love this book. We'll get into like the style and all that, but let's do just the basic outline of the plot. You have the main character. So the book is in Italian. We read an English translation from the Italian, we should say. So all of the characters are Italian. The book takes place in Italy, at sort of a seaside resort town. We meet our protagonist, main character, let's say. Yeah. I don't know. We'd go so far as protagonist.
She's not a hero.
And not necessarily. And no, but she's also not a villain necessarily. But she's she's an academic. She's a professor, and she's on vacation at this resort by herself. She's like a working vacation kind of a thing. And as she's at the resort, she's observing the other people who are at the resort. There's, you know, couples and this and that, but there's this one big family, big loud family. And in the book, they're not Italian. They're I forget where they're from, but anyway, it doesn't matter. They're just boisterous. They're different, a slightly different culture than what she's accustomed to. They're very loud. They're very demonstrative. There are these two sisters. One is pregnant and the other one has a little girl. The little girl is kind of bratty. She's a little bit bratty. And she's, you know, they're playing, you know, and what I love about it is, it's very ordinary. You know, it's just like you'd see a family anywhere in any vacation spot. I mean, I live in San Diego. Those families, I run into them every day.
Right.
I just saw them at Home Goods. But as she's watching this very ordinary, very mundane family vacation interaction, she finds herself, she alternates. Her emotions go all over the place. She's inexplicably enraged. She doesn't quite know why. She's inexplicably sad out of nowhere. She doesn't quite know why. She even like giggles to herself, and she's having all of these weird emotional reactions that don't really make sense. They're kind of either out of proportion or out of sync with what she's observing in this family. And anyway, it's so, but they all, you know, like you do when you're on vacation at a hotel or something, you know, everybody goes to the pool in the middle of the day, or, you know, you all have your times that you do things at the same time. She's observing them over time. She's having these weird little reactions. And then one day the little girl has wandered off and the family is frantically looking for her. And the woman, the professor, finds the little girl. And the now she's like the hero to the family. Well, the little girl, throughout the whole first part of the book, the little girl has this doll, this like kind of trashy doll that she is. Yeah, like dirty. Like she takes the doll in the ocean and stuff, like, ugh. But she's got, you know, she has the doll everywhere. And the family is so swept up when that the girl has been found that they, you know, they whisk the girl off and they leave the doll behind. And the professor, for reasons that she does not understand herself, snatches the doll. She steals this little girl's doll. Then there's this whole section in the middle where she's kind of hiding the doll in her room. She's taking it out. She's looking at it. It's got like stuff that's oozing, because again, it's been like in the ocean. It's probably all moldy inside. And I don't even want to think about what's in this doll. Ugh. But she goes through this whole thing of, again, she doesn't understand her feelings. And so she's going through this whole thing of like, why did I take this doll? Okay, well, I've got to return the doll. I've definitely got to return the doll. Well, I can return it this way or I can return it that way. I don't want to return the doll. Well, that's weird. How come I don't want to return the doll? So she's going through this whole thing. And meanwhile, this child is like, the child like cries for days and days and days and days. I can't even imagine how annoying that must have been for the family. She doesn't stop crying for this doll. There are these little flashes. She has the professor has these little flashes of memory. And we find out that she has two daughters who are grown. But when she was raising them, she left them. She left her whole family for a time to pursue her academic career, which was very promising. But, you know, then she had two kids real quick and kind of got derailed. But she had this, she couldn't leave it behind. You know, she couldn't leave her passion, I guess, behind. And she leaves her family. She leaves them for several years. And then eventually she goes back and gets her daughters and raises them like for the rest of their lives with the father. There's a co-parenting thing. It's so interesting. So she's on vacation in herself with herself alone in this place. She's really unpacking, you know, I got the impression like she'd kind of been barreling through her life. She was an academic with a promising career. Then she got married. Then she got these kids. Things got really overwhelming. She had to just leave. She just got out of there. And then she was barreling through her academic career. And then she went back and got the kids and she was trying to make it work, but it's really hard to make it work. And this is like the first time she's had to sort of stop and breathe and work out why she made the choices that she made.
Yeah.
And she's really wrestling with it. It's so fascinating. It's so cool.
I don't even remember. There was a movie when we were kids that came out called Kramer versus Kramer. And it was Meryl Streep and Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah.
And the whole thing was the mother left the child. She had a breakdown. And she basically put the kid with her husband and said, you need to take care of him. I got to get out because I'm going to lose my mind. And of course, she's the villain and she's portrayed that way. This is 1979 or whatever. This is like, this is the story that would happen if we actually had stayed with her and the point of view, because they're going, she's going through these things. Like she, it's a story about selfishness. I mean, she's somebody that has a lot of desire to be alone, to do her own thing.
Right.
She's in her own head. She's like not even 25. I mean, she's very young when she has these kids and she has two of them right away.
And yeah. One right after the other.
Right after the other. They're like 2 years apart from one another. She's an academic. Her husband's an academic. That's a very stressful career choice, especially when in your 20s. You never hear great things about it. It's just a lot of work. She's flashing back to this. Like here she sees this girl, Nina, with a child. And at first she thinks, oh, my God, she's so natural at this. She's good, like with the way she holds the child and kisses her. And it's a lot of kissing and touching and stuff like that. Like it's, boy, that seems to come so naturally to her. It doesn't come naturally to me. And then she realizes Nina's overwhelmed by this kid who's screaming and crying about her doll. And she kind of feels like, oh, she feels like the way I do, that it's just, it's too much sometimes. Nina's husband, I think in the book, they try to allude to the fact that they're mafia or there's some.
Yes, there's a, Yes, exactly. There's something about the family, like they're really close, but it's also, there's a dark thing going on there that like, yeah, like they're in organized crime somehow, or we don't quite know.
Yeah.
There are these little sinister flashes of like the men doing quote unquote business with each other.
Right.
On the, you know, like having these weird conversations, and it's just amazing. I mean,
yeah.
The way that the story is woven through, you're going back and forth in time. You know, she sees the girl that flashes, like you do when you're like, my kids are older now, but when I see little tiny kids, of course you flash back to when your kids are that age, but she flashes back and she's like, oh, wow. I did a major thing there. Wow. Do I regret that? I sort of do, but I also sort of don't, you know, it's just this really interesting look into her interior life. And yeah, she made a decision to be selfish. You could argue that she's there for selfish reasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was sort of like for her, she had to be selfish to survive, but that has consequences.
Exactly. And I think she thought, you get this hint that she's not close to her mother, that her mother was very, something was up with the mother.
Yes. And, you know, so that's the thing that's not in the movie at all.
It's your mother.
That's the thing that's not in the movie at all. And which is fine. There's this thing that comes up about her own mother, her own upbringing, that it was very suffocating, that she had like very strict parameters in terms of what was expected of how she was going to live her life. And then she got married. That was part of that. And so she was always kind of bristling up against what society expected of her in the form of her mother. So that's a thing that kind of comes up a bit. So it's a lot about parenting. It's a lot about guilt. It's a lot about, yeah. How do you maintain your individuality? I think Freudian there. But yeah, how do you maintain that? Or do you maintain that? Or, you know, how do you navigate that? And meanwhile, she's watching this family that's like all tied up, their business, their marriages, their messiness is just like all tied up. It's totally on display, where she's very closeted and secretive about her own family issues. And they're just letting it all hang out on the beach. There's this character of the caretaker of the apartment where she's staying, who's somebody who's her own age, who's also seems to have made some kind of chose to be selfish decisions in his life. And so they kind of have a rapport. They're kind of peers in that way. But eventually the mother of the girl, because she was the one who found the girl when the girl was missing, and the girl was missing for kind of a while, because it was scary for a minute. The mother of the girl confides in her that she's overwhelmed. Like the protagonist confides in that mother that she left her kids. She does say, like, you know, I left my kids, and, you know, I'm not sure how I felt about that, but I was completely overwhelmed. And the mother of the little girl relates to that. And she's starting an affair with the concierge.
Yeah.
His name is like Guido or Gino or something in the book, his Italian name. So she's having like a little fling with him. And she's considering doing what this academic lady has done. And, you know, we've established that our main character is a selfish person, but she kind of makes this sort of unselfish, again, here's spoiler alert, unselfish decision to kind of say to this woman, you know, I'm not so sure how I feel about my choices. Maybe think about that a little bit more before you, you know, take it very seriously. And oh, by the way...
Well, she'd say, like, also in the book, it goes into much more. I mean, the movie they show, they don't tell. In the book, she talks a lot of that. Her daughters say things like, why did you even have me? Why did you even give birth to me?
Yeah.
There's a lot of that into their adulthood, which means there's a lot of trauma for them. Like they felt, you know, they felt completely abandoned. And, you know, who wouldn't if that happened to you? And so she has to, you know, she gets those accusations. And like you said, those are consequences for what you did. And I think she's still trying to think about it. I think she wakes up in a hospital, I believe. Or it's very early in the book. Like
That's right.
Yeah.
She's hospitalized at one point. That's right. I forgot about that part.
And she,
so she has issues.
She's issues on top of her issues. Yeah. And she's this angry person. She doesn't know why. And she's a depressed person and she doesn't know why. And she just doesn't get it. And she's like, you said, here's somebody, you know, and I know this as somebody who travels alone sometimes, you know, you're sort of the one, like people say, oh, can you move your umbrella over here? Can you do that? Yeah. You just assumed you're going to do it. Like,
yep.
Yeah. And you just have to suck it up and take it because no one's trying to be mean. It's just they're trying to have a vacation too. So that's okay. But she's got a lot of resentments going on. But at the end, so let's just kind of, we're going to spoil. We'll fast forward a little bit.
Yeah.
In the end, she talks with Nina.
That's the mother of the little girl.
The mother of the little girl. And she starts saying to her, like, yes, I made my choices. Motherhood's very challenging. You're having this affair with this guy. Do you really want to? Then she says, oh, and by the way, because she thought she could open up to her, she said, I took this from you. I took the doll. Here's your doll.
I stole the doll, basically. Yeah.
And Nina's like, what? And Nina gets more and more upset. And at one point she gave Leda,
that's the name of the main character.
There's a lot of names that sound the same. Leda gave her a hat pin for a big hat to wear and kind of showed her how to use it. The girl gets so, Nina gets so upset that she stabs her with the pin as she walks out. She's like,
yeah.
Because she
in the book, it goes all the way through her.
Yes. And she's bleeding. And she's kind of like, oh, wow. And then at the end of the book, what you hear is that she gets a phone call from her daughters. And both of her daughters are on the phone. And they're like, Mom, we were terrified. What's going on? You haven't called. You haven't responded. And she says, I'm not dead. I'm fine.
No, that's not what she says.
What did she say?
That's not what she says. That's what she says in the movie. So this is the biggest difference between book and movie is that line. So in the book, and maybe I'm remembering it wrong.
Do you have the book in front of you?
I let me pull the book up in front of me because I don't want to miss
this. Yeah, because
I was like floored by that end. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, go.
So the daughters are worried and they're like, oh my gosh, we didn't know were you sick? Are you dead? What's going on? Now she's just been like stabbed with a hat pin. And what she says is, and this is the last line of the book, she says, I am dead, but I'm fine.
Oh my God. That's right.
That's what she says. And so when it ends and it ends abruptly, that's it. Then the book's over. And you're like, is she dead? Like, is she really dead? Is she really dying? What's going to happen? Writing, it's so good. this whole story it's told in these just like subtle vignettes, you know, it's just like her thoughts, you know, like the way your thoughts leap around, you know, from one thing to the other. I'm sitting on my beach chair. Oh, I'm hot in the sun. Look at that family with the doll. Oh, that reminds me of when my little girl had a doll. Oh, that was right before I left them. And, you know, and it moves through her consciousness and her processing the choices that she's made in her life in this very subtle, very kind of natural flowing way, like your thoughts would go from one thing to another. The writing is, it reminded me just in terms of like the quality of it, the book and the movie, it reminded me of The Arrival.
Yes.
In that way, because The Arrival kind of goes back and forth in time as well, of course, but it is just some of the most beautiful writing I've seen in some time. The writing is so good.
And they don't over-explain anything because it's kind of like, like I said, like because earlier in the book, she's at the hospital. So does she go to the hospital after this?
We don't know.
We have no idea.
Yeah.
We have no idea. But she's kind of like, maybe she feels like this is I deserve this stabbing, you know, and is okay with it or, you know, she's making peace with that or, you know, maybe this is my punishment.
Yeah, you do get a sense of like, because when she decides to come clean about the doll, and again, we've seen her wrestle with, should I give the doll back? I need to give the doll back. I can't give the doll back.
They're going to think
it's
crazy.
And it's not. Yeah. She's just kind of, you know, and again, just from one thought to the next, literally when she, you know, and again, she's coming to terms with the decisions that she's made in her life. And so when she comes clean about the doll, she kind of understands that, you know, there's probably going to be some consequences for that. You know, she doesn't go like, you stabbed me with a hat pin. She's like, oh, I guess that's what happens.
Yeah. You know? steal a doll. You get stabbed.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
It's such a beautiful story. It also reminded me, I don't know why, maybe just the style, maybe the fact that it's Italy. It reminded me a bit of Death in Venice, where you have like the guy by himself and he's observing. Now, in this case, he's like in love with that little boy. But I don't know. It's the style, the writing style. I mean, do yourself a favor and read this book.
Yes.
It's such a beautiful work of art. Ugh, I love it. I can't stop thinking about it.
Yeah, same here. I completely loved it too. Okay, so we're going to transition. We were at the book. Came out in 2006. And then a couple of years ago, Maggie Gyllenhaal was deciding that she wanted to take her career from acting into screenwriting and directing. And she took this material on. She adapted this screenplay, which is fantastic. She directed this movie, and I'm going to play the trailer for you right now. Once again, this is streaming on Netflix right now.
Miss Caruso, welcome.
Thank you.
Excuse me. I work at the Beach House. Just let me know if you need anything.
Great.
Kids.
Yes, I have two daughters.
Hey,
your mommy's a big girl.
You're my big girl.
She's driving me crazy.
What were your daughters like when they were little?
I can't remember much, actually.
I saw you at the beach today.
I didn't see you.
I saw you.
The little girl lost her doll. She wouldn't stop crying.
Children are a crushing responsibility. Happy birthday.
Getting a lot of attention in the press. First, does the character of Leda die? That is one of the top Google questions if you start looking into this movie.
Well, because that's you don't know. You don't even know in the book.
Yeah, you're just
you don't know.
You don't know. Maybe she did. Maybe she
maybe
didn't.
maybe the mom punctured something when she was sticking a hat pin all the way through that woman. You don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a mystery.
So we have Olivia Colman as...
Come on.
I mean, she played Queen Elizabeth. I mean, she does...
Is there anything I won't watch that woman do? The answer is no.
No.
I have been a fan of her. I was a fan of her for so many years as a comedic, you know, as a comedian, as a comic actress. So funny. If you've ever seen Peep Show or Mitchell and Webb or... there was one that she did that was like a news spoof in the 90s. So funny. But of course, she's such a in the queen. Come on. Yeah. Is Olivia Colman in it? Okay, I'm there. I'm watching it.
Exactly. So she plays her later. Caruso is her name. And Jesse Buckley plays the younger version of her. So it goes back in time.
Really well. Oh, my really God. Really convincingly.
Jesse Buckley, who's Irish. And she was in Fargo, the last season of Fargo. She played the crazy
nurse. Oh, yeah. That's right.
She was so good in that. We have Dakota Johnson as Nina.
Everybody's so good in this.
Do you remember?
It's brilliant.
I remember when Don Johnson and Melanie Griffith were married and they said they were announced they were pregnant with her. And I thought, that's
going to
be the best looking human being ever. And
Turns out,
yes, and talented. Ed Harris as Lyle.
He's wonderful. So he's playing the caretaker role. He's phenomenal. Everybody in this thing is so great.
Peter Sarsgaard plays Professor Hardy. He's the one that has a fling with Leda, the younger version.
The younger one, yeah.
And he's also the husband of our director. Dagmara Dominovich, she's Callie, and she's the sister who's having a baby.
That's the sister-in-law.
And she has She has a much bigger role here, I think, than she does, from what I remember.
Yeah, I think so, too. It's good, though.
It's good. Oh, she's great.
Yeah.
Paul Mescal is Will. And then I thought the girls that played the younger versions, like they played the little girls, those were good actresses.
They were superb.
Robin
really,
Allen and Ellie
really
Blake.
Great performances.
Oh, my
yeah.
goodness. I mean, they just, and then we have Oliver Jackson Cohen. He plays Tony, the husband of Nina.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This movie is just, I loved this movie. It was so.
You know, when I read the book, which we've established that I loved, when I read the book, I thought, and the same thing with Arrival, the same thing when I read Arrival, I thought, how on earth are you going to make this? Like, it's literally, the book is literally just this woman's thoughts and how they go, they jump from one thing to the next and they kind of flow, you know, in terms of like the actual action that happens, it's very little. Like, it's mostly her sitting on a beach chair by the pool or the ocean. And so, yeah, I thought, like, how on earth do you do that? And it's such a, like we said, it's such like a delicate, quiet, subtle story. Doesn't always work great on film. Maggie Gyllenhaal knocks it right out of the park. I mean, she totally captures that about the book, like just the character of that writing. But I think by making the changes that she made, like setting it in Greece, having Leda be British, she's an academic in the United States, like all those kind of choices, having the caretaker being an American who's there for some reason, you know, his little mystery that's going on. And then the family is, they're also American, the family with the little girl, they have like a Jersey accent, you know, all of that really helps the story to kind of live on its own in a great way. Olivia is so wonderful about like the way she's just acting without saying anything. She's a lot of acting without saying anything in this movie. And everybody's doing it, but she's really doing it. And she's doing it to the hilt. So good.
So she's not calming down.
Yeah. It's been a weird day. We found her, and then she lost her doll.
I used to have a doll like that, called Mina.
Nina?
Mina. Or Mini Mama, as my mother called her. You'll find it.
Yeah.
See you tomorrow.
So good. I loved everything. The lighting, the costumes, the sets. Ugh.
It takes place in Greece. They're in Greece on this vacation. And at first Olivia shows up and she has this guy take care of her. And he's like, he moves the umbrella. He gets her an ice cream. She's like sitting there relaxed, arm behind her head, leaning back.
So, yeah, this isn't bad.
And, you know, we've all been there. You know, you get on the subway and it's not that crowded. And then all of a sudden you get to a stop and it's like, oh no, like all the kids show up on a school trip.
Yeah, there's that one family.
Shows up. And it's like out of, you know, National Lampoon. Like they just kind of show up and it's just people. And you could just see it on her face. Like, are you kidding me? I paid for a month to be here. I had these bozos. But that's, you know, that's what vacationing is. You have to like put up with other people. And she's completely smitten with, they have like that eye connection. And she, like I said, at first she thinks Nina's like just such a lovely young mother. And then she can kind of really see what's going on. The interaction with Tony, her husband, he's kind of a thug. You know, you get that. He's very possessive of her, the way he tries to kiss her. He grabs her head and, you know, and the little girl is like bratty. But I think like her mom's kind of checked out. Her dad isn't there very much. Dagmar.
She's not a monster. She's just she's a little bratty.
She's a little kid. And then we have.
She's not in her own environment.
No. And she's a all single, you know, she's an only child. I mean, there's not, you know, and then we have. So Callie is the sister-in-law and she shows up and she's 42. We find out she's 42 and she's finally pregnant and super proud of it. You know, yes, absolutely. You know, you wait a long time for something like that to happen. And as soon as she's interacting with Olivia Colman, Olivia Colman's like, oh, well, you know, it's very hard to be a mother. It's the most, it's.
Yeah. And it never lets up ever.
It's always hard. Just so you know, it's always hard. It's always going to be challenging. You know, it's just, you know, doesn't want to give her up. And then she goes about her life. And then, you know, the girl disappears and she remembers when she was. And this, I've never had this happen to me. And I'm not a parent. I don't know if this ever happened to you. If your kids ever got lost on you.
It's the worst.
Yeah. I can imagine.
Ever.
Yeah.
It's. Ugh.
You feel terrible. You feel just completely, you feel like a fool. You're helpless. Mm-hmm. And so.
Yeah. That's where you're like, I had one job.
Yes. You had one job to do. Just hang on to the kid's hand. But you know, kids disappear really easily. They're very quick.
I'm sorry to say that I put my mother through that quite a few times. I can remember a number of times and a number of circumstances where I don't know what I was thinking that I wandered off and panicked my parents.
My mom would grab my wrist with one hand and then the other hand pointed in my face like, you stay right by me. But she's then the family rescuer because now, you know, they were bitching about the umbrellas on the sand and the seats and all that stuff, but now she's amazing to them. So they offer a piece of cake and then you think things are kind of copacetic, but there's sort of this dangerous thing that's happening with the guys, not with the women.
Yeah. You never know. Again, you're just observing it as she would observe it as a total outsider. You know, like your instinct is like, there's something like really not right going on here, but I am not going to ask about it.
Right. I'm not going to get involved. And then also I travel by myself. Sometimes it's safety. You have to think about like, she's sleeping with the windows open like that. I'm like, ooh, I don't know if I would do that if I were you. But
I thought that too.
Yeah, that immediately that went to the brain. But she's like I say, she's staying in this huge house, by the way. She has this big, enormous place just for herself. But she's like all excited. But then little things happen. Like she goes to her fruit bowl and you turn the orange over and the orange is rotten. Like the fruit is rotten.
Yeah, it looks beautiful. It looks great. But when she turns it over, it's all rotten, which is such a great
touch.
I thought that was so awesome.
And the bugs, like she had bug juice on her pillowcase because there's
that was in the book.
Yeah.
And there was a moment in the book too. Like, I don't remember that fruit thing being in the book, but it's such a great visual with the colorful, the fruit looks gorgeous. And then when she turns around, it just looks disgusting. But there in the book, there was a moment where they do have the thing where she's got the doll and it's oozing like gunk and like weird looking stuff on her. In the book, not only is that happening, but she kind of finally opens up the doll and there's like a worm in it. It's so gross.
She's constantly kissing the doll and squeezing it and getting the juices to
and
come
talking
out,
to, and it, talking and like, to it
and then she puts, lady. And then she puts it away so she doesn't think about it, but then she goes back to it. So she's like going back and forth with this thing. And then what's also happening is that she's going into town. She has dinner by herself. And then the caretaker, Lyle, shows up and they have like a bit of a conversation. There's this great scene that this is something that happened to me sort of. But she goes to the movies and she's watching an old movie.
Oh, yeah.
And having such a
love
great
that
time.
Scene.
And then these yahoos, these guys just show up and they're just noisy and obnoxious.
It's like, why'd you even go to the movies? Well, why are you at the movies? You could be boisterous and all that out on the street, but you got to come into the movies where, like, the one lady's obviously trying to watch the movie.
There's like a few people there. There's like, they're just sitting there quietly watching a movie, and they just have to show up and be dicks. They just have to show up and, because they can. They're daring people to say something. And there's, I mean, that happened to me on my first time in Paris on the metro. I was followed by a group of Italian visitors, and they kept like swarming around me in different, it was terrifying. And they were singing Feeling Groovy by Simon and Garfunkel.
Ew.
It was terrifying. Yeah. Eventually got away. So this is bringing back stuff for me. Cause I was like, I was like, get out of there. Get out of there.
Yeah.
Get out of there.
I thought that too. Like, don't antagonize them.
Yeah.
Just go.
Yeah. And she tries to like go to the front desk and have them kick him out, but they don't do anything. Then there's another scene, which I super, and I'm not the biggest Bon Jovi fan, but Living on a Prayer is kind of hard to resist, is it not? It's like once you
That's such a great scene. And when she's singing in the car to the Talking Heads, yeah. too. Those choices, and none of that, of course, is in the book, but those kind of choices that the director and writer made, they really convey how, you know, she made this again. She, for whatever reason, you know, she needed to make this selfish choice for her own preservation. She has these little moments that we get to see in the movie, not so much in the book, but we get to see in the movie where she gets to enjoy that, you know, but we also see that, again, she's dealing with the consequences of that a lot. And she doesn't have the self-awareness quite to work out, you know, why she's making the choices that she's making in any situation. Like when she's yelling at those young men. I thought that was such a great thing because she's yelling at them in the movie theater, but you can see that she's also scared while she's doing it. Like she doesn't know why she's yelling at them or what she's planning to get out of it.
She has all this rage in her and she doesn't know what to do with it. And then so when she's out with, and they're dancing to Bon Jovi and they're singing along to it and she's grooving with it. And then this family just shows up in the doorway of the club and they're doing air guitar and stuff. And she's just like, shit. And she's got to get out again. Like this family just is like haunting her. And she knows the bad news. So when she develops a friendship with Will, the Irish guy that's their concierge, of course, Nina's going to be having a fling with him. And Nina wants to use her place. She's all for it because she gets it like this.
Yeah. She wants to use Leda's apartment.
Yeah.
Cause to have a fling with the concierge guy.
And Leda is pretty much on board with this because she knows that the husband's, you know, a dangerous guy. Leda and Nina have this conversation about the doll. Like they're talking about life and relationships and motherhood. And she, let's go back a little bit more. Let's go back to Jesse. So she meets Leda when she's younger. She is married to their husband, and the scenes with her and her daughter,
her daughters, are
rough because
they're
a handful. They're a handful, and they're in a small apartment, and her husband's, you know, he can do his job. He can be on the phone for his job. He can be on computer for his job, but she's expected.
But she's on like 24/7.
Right.
Yeah.
And she's an Italian professor.
And they were a handful.
Yeah. And she's an Italian literature professor. So she's very intelligent, but that requires a lot of work too. And they're just sort of clashing. And she gets in, and this is in the book, she gets invited to this big conference and it's a big deal that they pay for the ticket and she gets to go. And she's like to her husband, like, I'm outie. You take care of them. I got to go. And this is where she meets Peter Sarsgaard, who plays this older professor. And they're immediately, you know, flirting with one another in Italian. He understands.
He's really familiar with her work.
And Yeats.
He's a big fan.
Yep. And he's a big fan of the poet Yeats. And there's a, and they're having this connection. And they have an affair. It's very beautifully filmed. It's not graphic or anything. It's, but it's very, they're very intimate right away. Like she, he gets her and she gets him. And I like the scene where she comes back home and she's still with the husband and she's out on the playground with the kids. And she's just, he calls her the lover, and she starts flirting with him in Italian and her kids are like 5 feet away and she's just completely, she's checked out.
There's a scene like that in the book, but in the book, she's talking to him on the phone. She's flirting with him in Italian on the, or whatever language on the phone. And the girls are there and they hear her and they understand her. So part of the girl's trauma is like, they were, they fully knew what was going on. When they were little and she left, like there, it's not like they don't have answers. Like they know what happened. They're just traumatized.
Yeah. And she tells her husband, I got to go away. I'm going to go away and you need to take care of them, but don't leave them with my mother. Don't ever leave them with my mother.
Right.
Ever, ever, ever.
Which he immediately does.
Which he does, of course. Oh, and one of the things that I also, I keep remembering such great things, but they have this scene where these hitchhikers are outside their property.
Yeah, which was also in the book. This is in the book as well, this scene. I love the way it's done in the movie. Love it.
Yeah, it's like at first she's completely irritated. These people are kind of dropping in on her life and her husband's like, come in, have some wine, hang out. And then she just has a, such a great time with them. And you find out that the man in the relationship, there's a man and a woman, he's a father with young sons that he left behind in order to travel with this woman. So she's already got this kind of going in her mind like, oh, it's a thing you can do, maybe should you do it, who knows, but it is a, it's not an, it's a possibility. So when she does leave her husband finally, it's, it creates this big rift. She's gone for 3 years, and by the time she comes back to the girls, they're, you know, they're, they have their
adolescence. That, I mean, 3 years is a lot in a child's growth. So yeah, you know, 3 years where they, you know, their mom has left. They knew what, again, they fully knew what was going on. They're being, their father's kind of shuttling them off to this grandmother, which in the book, again, there's a lot more about the relationship, Leda's relationship with her own mother in the book. Like you, they just kind of allude to it. It was one of those things that they just had to cut for the movie. But one of the kind of interesting little arcs in the book is that Leda is, earlier in the book, she's remembering again, like how much she kind of rankled living at home and her mom drove her crazy and she couldn't wait to get out of there. By the end of the book, you know, as she's been processing her feelings, she's remembering how the husband like dumped the kids with her mom. And that was like the one thing that she didn't want it, that she didn't want. But then she comes to the conclusion, like, you know what, actually my mom was fine with them. Like,
yeah,
you know, so what? So they picked up a few like old lady phrases and they know how to cook some things now. Like she didn't really do any damage to my kids.
Yeah.
So that's a whole thing that she kind of makes peace with her mom, at least, you know, in terms of herself. So you don't see that at all in the movie, but I thought the way that they handled it was very good.
Yeah. And in the end, we go a little fast forward now to the end. Sorry about the little diversion, but I couldn't not talk about those scenes. I mean, it was just fantastic. But there, Leda and Nina are having a conversation about Nina cheating on her husband. Should she leave him? You know, what are her choices? And this is when Leda feels like they have some trust going on here and says, I took the doll. Here you go. Here's the doll back. And then she just says, I'm an unnatural mother. That's like,
yeah. Which is what she says in the book too. And I liked also though in the movie that, and I don't remember this being in that scene in the book, but maybe I just wasn't reading it that way. She says to Nina, like, hey, I took the doll. And she's like, oh, you found the doll. And she's like, no, I took the doll. And she's like, well, she's trying to figure out like, cause she trusts her. Right. So she's like, there must be some reason, you know, for my own good that you took the doll. Like, did you think that it was having a negative impact on my kid, or like, why, what was your, and she's basically like, I just took it. I'm just not a good person. You know, yeah. I was being selfish. I wasn't thinking, I wasn't putting the child first. I was putting myself first. And for some reason, in that moment, I felt like I needed this doll. And then I felt like I couldn't give it back. And then it got real weird. And then, but, and so the mom, and again, I can totally understand her being like, yeah. Do you have any idea how much this kid has been driving me insane? Like, she drove me into the arms of another man because I was going so, I was so overwhelmed. And you could have put an end to this like days and days ago, and you didn't. And that happens in the book too. And, so, and then she stabs her with the, with a hat pin.
What? You found her? Where did you find her?
No, I took her.
Why?
I don't know.
You don't know?
No.
But I don't understand. You did you think that the doll wasn't good for us?
I was just playing.
Playing? We were all messed up. You saw us.
I'm an unnatural mother. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, Nina, take the keys. I'm leaving tonight and the apartment's going to be empty till the end of the month. Nina, I'm so sorry.
I don't want anything.
You're so young and it doesn't pass. None of this passes.
You look excited.
Better watch your back, bitch.
But the ending is very different.
Yeah, in the movie, spoiler, she stabs her, and then Lita's like, "I gotta go." She's going anyway. She even offered like to Nina, like, "Look, I've kept this place for a month. I'm gonna leave right now. You can have it.
It's yours.
It's yours. Just take it." And Nina's like, "No, I want nothing to do with you." And so Lita's going to the airport, and she's so worn out or tired or injured, I don't know, but she just throws her luggage down the stairs.
Oh, I love that.
I want to do that one day because that just like it must have been so freeing.
I've done that.
Have you? Just tossed it down.
I have. That's like, you know what? There's nothing breakable in here.
Yeah, I've got t-shirts and underwear. It'll be fine. Does she get driven? She's driven to the airport or she's
she drives herself.
And she's getting dizzy and she's getting dizzy. And so she has to pull over. And then,
which we've seen her have little woozy spells throughout the entire, even as a young woman, she's having these weird woozy spells that we don't understand.
Right.
So it could be that. It could be the stabbing. It could be a combination of things. We don't know.
Nervous breakdown. Like, who knows what it is? But she's
we don't know.
She drives to the side of the road. She's right by the beach. And she crawls down to the beach and she's just at the shore and she falls asleep. And then there's a break and then all of a sudden, boom, it's daylight. And she wakes up and she's in the water. And then she goes to the shore. She goes by closer to where the car is.
Now, none of this is in the book, this part.
No, and we don't know if it's real or not either. I mean, she gets a phone call from her daughters. No. The daughters say, you're like, "Mom, we were worried about you. Like, what's going on? Are you okay?" And she's like, "Oh, I'm fine. How are you doing?" Immediately. And they're going on. And you get the idea. Like,
yeah. So in both the book and the movie, the daughters call. And again, we don't know if it's really happening or not.
Right.
She gets a call from her daughters. And the daughters say, in both the book and the movie, the daughters say, "We didn't know if you were dead or alive." They say something like that. Like, we thought you were dead, or we want to make sure you were alive. In the book, she says, "I am dead,
right?
But I'm fine." In the movie, she says, "I'm very much alive. How are you?" Which is very different.
Yeah, and you know, they're
two very different things.
And she peels the orange, and then it flashes back to her favorite memory with her daughters, is them in her arms.
Yeah.
And she was peeling an orange, and she did it like a snake skin, like you just do one long,
like a whole coil.
Coil.
Yeah.
And so that's what she was doing for them, and that's what they ended on. And once again, this is now people are saying, "Is she dead? Has she died?
We don't know.
Is this heaven? Is this, what is going on here?
Did she even wake up on the beach and get a call from her daughters? We don't know. Did she just crash her car? We don't know.
Is she dead? Is she in purgatory? What's going on? We don't know. And that's the end.
Yep. Which I thought was great. I mean, it's totally, again, that one line, this book is so, the story is so subtle that like that one line is super important. So that to change it like that,
right?
I was like, whoa, but I do think it totally works. I think it's great. I just, the whole thing, I mean, I so love the choices that were made, you know, the things that are different from the book, I think are really good choices and really work for the movie in a way that it probably wouldn't have, maybe like for an American audience like us, like we probably wouldn't have, it wouldn't have been, resonated as much, I think, if it had been like completely true to the book and set the, exactly the way the book is. So I really appreciate the really considered choices that were made in the script.
But it, the spirit of it is there.
Oh, absolutely. And the style. She somehow captures that extraordinary writing style.
I also really love the music. It's Dickon Hintzcliffe.
It's excellent.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Really good. Yeah.
Great music choices. It's just a beautiful setting. It opened at the Venice Film Festival this past September. It just got a bunch of SAG awards. Olivia Colman is nominated. I think she's going to get it. I don't know.
It's brilliant. It's such a great performance. Wow.
Yeah. I think it's going to be mentioned for the Academy Awards. I think it's absolutely going to get some Academy Award or the Independent Spirit Awards. I mean, this is just, it's, and this is just Olivia Colman, just like her finest work. It's so good. Because she's got to carry the whole movie with her face, you know, with her expression.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
It's her reactions to things. But I have to say also, I think Dakota Johnson is really good.
She is. She is. Yeah. It's them too. But it really is. I mean, it's all just like the book. It's all about that character, that one main character. But I really love Dakota Johnson's performance because that character is a very difficult one too. Mm-hmm. Her arc that she is on. She enjoys her daughter when she's with her daughter, but her daughter is also a little bit bratty and kind of a handful. And it's really overwhelming, you know, especially when they're at that age and you can't take your eyes off of them for 30 seconds without them vanishing.
And they always want you awake.
They want
your attention.
Oh my God, that scene where Olivia Colman, it's young Leda, and she's basically, she's like passed out. She's so tired. And then I was like, great, I'll comb your hair. Oh man. Yeah. So what do you think, book or movie?
I can't decide. I think it's going to be a tie.
I can't either. I think so.
I loved that book. I want to read this book again.
Me too. It's so good. The opening, just the style, like, oh, virtually nothing is happening. Virtually nothing. She's sitting there, but like her thoughts and all that, it just grabbed me and I couldn't put it down. I just loved that book. And the movie is just a tour de force. It's phenomenal. Loved it. Loved it. Loved it. I wish I could see it on the big screen.
Yeah, I wish I could too. I think that would have been special. And it's so, especially for a debut, it's like a very quiet film. She's not doing any crazy shots or any, nothing flashy.
Nope. But the lighting is perfect. Yes. The, you know, all the shot, all the angles, perfect. Everything is so considered, so well done. And yeah, no, it's not flashy. It's not hitting you over the head with anything. It's very understated, but and it haunts you just like the book does. It's,
yeah.
Love it. I can't recommend it enough. Please watch it.
Yes, please watch. It is on Netflix, like we said.
Yeah.
Please watch it. But yeah, if you're thinking about reading the book, do so.
Yeah. I mean, the whole time I was like, wow. So what are we doing next?
Well, it's January. And just to remind everybody, February will be African American History Month. March will be musicals in March. Right now, it's sort of like a little bit of everything. We had a couple of ideas. There's Hunt for the Wilder People. It's a New Zealand, it's Taiki Waititi. It's based on a story. Let me look up at my notes. It's on Amazon right now. It has Sam Neill. It's Barry Crump. It's a comedy. It's 120 page count. That's streaming on Amazon right now. We had Mr. Popper's Penguins. I was thinking one day if we want to do a song again, we could do Yellow Submarine.
Oh, that might be fun.
Wouldn't that be fun?
I'm intrigued by that New Zealand one.
Yeah, it's supposed to be really great. I'm sorry, let me write this. It's Taika Waititi, or I think that's how you say it. I can't ever say his name correctly. But yeah, we had a lot of requests for that in Jojo Rabbit. So maybe we'll go to Jojo Rabbit next time. But
okay, cool.
Yeah, I think it'll be really fun. So once again, that's Hunt for the Wilder People, and the author is Barry Crump, and it's streaming on Amazon. All right, so once again, everything has to be streaming and easy to get. Please send us your suggestions. We love getting suggestions from you all. Once again, our email is bookversusmoviepodcast@gmail.com. And Margo, where can they find you?
You can find me online at coloniabook.com, and all of my social media callouts are at She's Nacho Mama. And where can they find you?
You can find me at Brooklyn Fit Chick for my social media stuff. My site is brooklynfitchick.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will be back soon with a new episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Book Versus Movie podcast. We are a part of the Frolic Podcast Network. You can find more podcasts you will love at frolic.media/podcasts. We follow the hashtags Lady Pod Squad and Potter and Family. If you want to support the show, you can go to our Patreon page, go to Patreon, and look for Book Versus Movie podcast. We have a basic Facebook page, but we also have a private Facebook group. Go to Facebook and type in Book vs. Movie Podcast Group if you want to join that. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Book vs. Movie. Spell all those words out. If you'd like to send us an email, it's Book vs. Movie Podcast. Spell that all out at gmail.com. You can follow Margot D. at Brooklyn Fit Chick on social media, and Margot P. at She's Nacho Mama. Thanks so much again for checking out our show, and we'll be back soon with a new episode.